views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Live and direct from my subterranean lair inside the third dimension of the material plane of planet Earth. My name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, baby, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we all vibrate the same frequency. Hello, everybody in the chat room, everybody on the World Wide Web, everybody in the cosmos. It's a Aries moon, and it's transferring to Taurus. We got the wonderful and beautiful Maria Wheatley here tonight. And I'm sorry that we're a couple minutes late, but we're having Skype issues, but we're still going to get our message heard. No one can keep good people down. Now, Maria, she's a second-generation dowser. She's an author, a mystic. She's an expert on sacred ancient sites and earth energies. You can find her at esotericcollege.com and theaveryexperience.co.uk. I want to welcome the Spiral Radio, the wonderful Maria Wheatley. Maria, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. It's crazy how these, you know, unseen forces inside the machine try to mess with us. This interference is crazy. It's nerve-wracking sometimes.
That's right. It always is in opportune moments.
Yeah, it's always everything will be working smooth, and then when you need it most, you know, it's insidious like that. It's almost like a magical force inside the electricity.
Absolutely.
So, just before we get into your stuff about the elongated skulls in Stonehenge, because that's an amazing topic, I thought I just wanted to ask you a quick question about the frequency and the energy on Earth as we are in this transitional wave that's been upon us lately. I know you've been feeling it, and I know that you're an expert on Earth energies, and you teach classes and lectures, and how I communicate with Gaia, Goddess Gaia, at least, is I picture that spiral. That's why I even named the Spiral Radio. It's for many reasons, but I picture that spiral vortex. I make it become my like pineal gland or my third eye, and I like tap into that earth energy and the rainbow colors that it permits around everyone and through the earth and underneath the ground. And I would really like to hear your take on the energy that's going on Earth right now, and, you know, the experience that you've had growing up as a mystic in a family of mystics.
Well, yeah, I mean, the kind of Earth energy has been really coming into its own since about 2010. It seems to, especially at the ancient sites like Stonehenge and Avebury and Silbury and sites far, far beyond on the British Isles and France. So I think it really is coming in waves of quite power. And at places like Stonehenge, when you could touch the stones prior to 2010, it was almost like as soon as you interacted with the site, bang, you got something. And that's when we were denied access to touching the stones at those sites. So I think, yes, any way we can relate to Mother Earth is a wonderful thing at the moment, because she wants to exchange the energies that she's receiving from within her and from the cosmos alike.
That's horrible, man. They don't let you touch the stones at all?
Not even on private access anymore, no.
And the military has taken control over those sites, basically, right?
Near enough. I mean, it's certainly surrounded by all the military establishments, and the body that looks after English Heritage and the National Trust are trying to block off every road that goes there. But there's one track that's left where you can have access to the monument, but you do have to now pay English Heritage, go on a bus. It's like Disneyland, no disrespect to your USA Disneyland.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's horrible. Yeah, they're really corrupted, and now I'm interested, because we all know that, you know, we have that spiral energy chakra points in our body. Now, does the Earth have spiral energy chakra points as well?
Oh, absolutely, and it's been looked into since about 1969 with wonderful authors and mystics like Robert Kuhn, who looked at the whole of the Earth and thought that, yes, there are Pacific chakra points, and, for example, Glastonbury and the Avebury area represents the heart chakra of Gaia, although there's different mystical views like that. So, yeah, Gaia has her own, and even on a local level, you could say that there's kind of local chakra systems that people can work with within an ancient site, for example, and even standing stones, especially the tall ones, say over about 6 feet high, they too have like chakra points. So it's really reflective.
Wow.
Our own body is reflective in the Earth and in the standing stones that the ancients put up.
That's amazing. And you know, you're saying Avery is basically the heart chakra point of the Earth? That's amazing.
A lot of people feel it's Glastonbury is the heart center, and others feel that it's Avebury, could be the higher heart center, but it contains the world's largest stone circle, for example. And Avebury is a very loving ancient site that can gently activate anyone that's present there, and it does so whether you're conscious or unconscious of it.
Yeah.
Avebury does change people, and so do all the other ancient sites as well. But Avebury does open up your heart center to realizing that there's no separation, no polarity. And if people come away from there with a sense of that, and that breeds change, it's the ripple effect.
That's really amazing. And, you know, what I'm familiar with is something that I think I've heard you even talk about in one of your lectures is, you know, the Earth has this rainbow Earth energy color to it, and I think the Chinese called it like the dragon's breath, like the spiraling snakes of Earth, rainbow colors. And that's amazing when you speak of that, because, you know, people don't understand that, you know, the Earth is like a living, breathing library of a goddess, and it's everything has imprinted memory on it. The water, the trees, everything around it has a certain energy, and it's amazing how you were, you know, grew up learning how to tap into that. I think that's amazing.
Oh, that's right. I mean, the Earth does give off these beautiful rainbow colors in the electromagnetic spectrum, you know, like reds through to the violets, and unseen colors like negative green, ultraviolet, infrared and infrared. It is an amazing, beautiful system. And you were talking about sort of chakra points earlier. There's some ancient sites over here, which are called long barrows or you know, chambered cairns, passage tombs, and they're often associated with burials, and that's how archaeologists look at that. But that's the second phase of them. If we look to the first phase of these ancient sites, they too can activate the chakra system. And some of the long barrows and cairns of Scotland, for example, around the Kilmartin area, which is a wonderful place in Scotland, one was opened in 1870. No bones were found at all. And in fact, the ancient site next to it, which was also a cairn or long barrow, was opened up, and they found just like an impression of a body in the floor in about 1870. So if you imagine, you know what it's like when you lie in a bed and you get up, the impression of you in the floor. And this is what they saw, an impression. And the only thing that was left was one single molar tooth. So they picked up the molar teeth, tooth rather, and it instantly disintegrated back into the impression on the floor. Now, there's an ancient Western occult tradition which is called merging, where you merge with the ancient site, for example, and you become one with it. You become the guardian, as a lot of people in the West have often spoken about. And I think in these sites where you do just get these mysterious impressions that were discovered, I think that's where you did get a guardian merge with that ancient site. And places like that really do activate the chakra system. And incidentally, once they do find these sites, they're cleared out.
Yeah, I feel it awakens that memory in your DNA as well. It's like that ancestral memory. It awakens, you know, certain symbols from the past as well. And these long barrels you talk about, are the military controlling those as well? Like, are these the ones that don't let you have access to them, or?
They're the ones that are specifically around Stonehenge, because Stonehenge is on what's called the Salisbury Plain. And the Salisbury Plain is a vast area which the military manages. So, the long barrow is there. Some are not even, it's beyond, it's not open to the public. You cannot enter those places. And even if you look at an OS map and you look at the ancient sites on the map, some of them aren't listed there. And all of the coordinates there are going to be slightly out. So if you're using a mobile phone to, you know, get a GPS reading, it's always going to be out quite close to Stonehenge, because the military change it from time to time, mainly because they fear terrorism. And if everybody could, you know, get a signal, it wouldn't be very good for national security. But nonetheless, there could be something else behind that. So, yeah, some of the long barrows, they're just not open to the public whatsoever.
And these long barrels, they're thousands of years old, and the military, like, are parking on top of them, and they still keep shape and don't bend, right, some of them?
Well, certain ones have been reported to have been built so well that up until about the 1980s, that tanks would go across these long barrows, and some of them are huge, around about 390 feet long by 100 or so feet wide. Some of them are very, very large. And yes, they could go over them in tanks, and it wouldn't disturb the whole outline of it. But some of them these days have been cordoned off on the military ground so that the tanks can no longer go over them. But they are in a firing range where live ammunition is being used. And, you know, for our ancestors old, that must be an awful situation. And some of their bones that were taken out in the Victorian era, around about, say, let's say 1870 to the 1910, they've all just been put in boxes in universities. So some of them are empty. And that's a sad reflection of how we've managed our ancestral history here in the UK.
You know, I feel like a strong Egyptian connection with this for some reason, too. I don't know what makes me say that. Is there some kind of link to the Egyptians as well, to the Salisbury Plain?
Well, one barrow in particular, which is probably about 2 miles from the centre of Stonehenge, turned out some very interesting finds. You know, like you get the little containers in the Egyptian tombs of the little gods and their figurines. Well, some of them were found very similar to that in a Stonehenge barrow. And they're in the British Museum, actually, as an anomaly. And there was great connections with Egypt from Stonehenge and Avebury, because there was trade going on, and Egyptian beads have been found in some of the burial mounds around Stonehenge and jet from the Baltics. It was a cosmopolitan place where people were interacting with the different ancient sites.
Yeah.
The Egyptians didn't just interact with the pyramids. The ancient Britons didn't just interact with Stonehenge. There was this complete interaction. And how I see it is people were going from one culture to the next to experience those energies and to experience one another as well, and the vibrations of the land.
Yeah, these long barrels, I'm trying to see if there's a connection with the elongated skulls of the Stonehenge with Akhenaten.
Oh, there is. I mean, and same with the Malta skulls. And in fact, there were elongated people all over the world. That is for sure. You find them in French barrows, chambered passage tombs. You find them all over the world. I think they were far more common than we're led to believe, and that these people, whether you call them a race or a culture, they were certainly very, very learned. Their brain capacities were larger than ours today. And they seem to be able to tap into Pacific areas of the planet. It is these people that arranged where Stonehenge would be, where the pyramids would be. You know, these people saw the world in a different way, or felt the world in a different way than we do today. And it's like people like yourself that are sensitive are reconnecting to the ancient ways to try and sort of understand that which was, which can hopefully change our lives for our children and our children's children.
Yeah, I know. I have 2 children myself, I know. And it's scary, you know, what's going on, you know, in today, because our true, you know, purpose on this planet is to explore our consciousness and to spiritually evolve. And it's, you know, where we've been halted, you know, when it comes to spiritual evolution in some cases. And, you know, people are just not even looking up anymore. They're just staring into their phone like it's some like altar to an alien god. It's pretty crazy. It's almost like they're scrying in a black mirror looking in their iPhone, you know.
Exactly,
crazy.
Exactly. And even when you take some people to ancient sites, you know, which I do, they don't see it through their own eyes anymore. They're seeing it through the pictures that they're taking on their mobile phones. Now, the thing about an ancient site, for example, some of the standing stones are like antennas. They're designed to transmit energy. And if you've got a smartphone by it, it will pull in that energy and start to transmit that as well. So I recommend, in fact, switch off your smartphone and experience the energies away from your phone is the way forward.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I wanted to see, my intuition tells me too, is something I want to ask your opinion about, and probably something you've already thought of too, is my intuition about the elongated skulls, it has something to do with the shape as well. I think it's more than just a trait or a gene. I think it goes deeper than that, Maria. I think it's, you know how like the cone shape and a pyramid shape in general generates a certain frequency and vibration and amplifies energies and can transmit them. I think the shape of the, you know, that shape of the skull possibly gives you more cerebral capabilities, you know, just having that shape of skull. Even like if you look at like wizards or Merlin, you always see them with that shape hat, that cone hat, or that shape pyramid type hat. And I think that shape itself generate some kind of cerebral capabilities or amplifies it. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, I do agree, because even if you make an ancient site into a conical shape, whether that's, we've just discussed cairns and round barrows, or, you know, a dome shape, that shape alone starts to change the earth energy. It starts to allow that to become a more spiritual frequency by changing those earth colors to a kind of spiritual gold color, or ultraviolet, as it's often seen by mystics.
So yeah, like if the astral doorway, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So if, you know, if indeed the shapes of the skull reflect that principle, then yes, they are going to be more spiritually evolved, I would presume, have an intricate understanding of the earth and the planetary brothers and sisters of Gaia, the planets in the solar system, and see less separation and more unity.
Yeah, yeah, and see, I think it even, like, with the ones that were headbinding, I feel it goes deeper than just them trying to imitate their gods or trying to imitate the ones that were more powerful than them. I think they were actually trying to expand their consciousness and have more, you know, touch with the cosmos and touch with the astral realms, and they were trying to expand their consciousness and not just, you know, trying to imitate the gods. I think they were trying to actually, you know, explore their consciousness that way and have more capabilities, cerebral.
Yes, I really do feel that. And that was definitely in the Neolithic period in the British Isles. The elongated ones were the ones that were then building the ancient sites. And there was must have been some kind of like changeover at some times, because when we look to the Bronze Age, which is sort of around 2500 BC, there are less and less and less elongated people around, and so there was a real transition of probably power base. It was going from sort of a more feminine culture, because when we look at the first phase of Stonehenge, and let's say the elongated people with their sensitivity, creativity, are there as a kind of part of the Stonehenge environment, then after a while, they seem to completely disappear. But they align Stonehenge in the first phase to all of the lunar cycles rather than the solar cycle. This was a goddess culture. And incidentally, you know, if we look to the Druids of 750 BC to the time of the Roman invasion, they were the descendants of the Avebury Stonehenge people. Now, they had a feminine day, and a feminine day, for example, is when the sun at sunset is the start of their day and sunrise is the end of their day. That's a feminine day. We live in a solar day, and the solar day is obviously when the sun rises and the sun sets. But theirs was different. So their whole day began in the dark. And that's why we celebrate Christmas Eve. It's a reflection, Beltane Eve, Midsummer's Eve. It's a reflection of the old feminine day compared to the solar day that we live in today. And so that's why... Yeah, so that's why it's Stonehenge. It was aligned to the moon. It was the start of the day. And it was a part of the goddess culture. So the moon would rise in the northeast. And then when the elongated people, what happened to them, some of them got murdered for sure. There's the evidence in the barrows for that. But then the people that took over Stonehenge widened the avenue and made it a solar monument. It transferred from the feminine goddess cult to the masculine cult. And nobody hardly realizes that Stonehenge in its first phase was lunar, because everybody is spoon-fed. Oh, it's all aligned to the midsummer sunrise. Yes, it is, but it also aligns perfectly, more accurate, to the mid-swing of the lunar phase. It is
the
lunar goddess monument.
Yeah, even the way that the stones are, we're about to go to our break in a second, but even the way the Astrega believe, you know, that even the way the stones are, you know, levitating there, and their position that they're in is the moon portal, like the two posts, and then the altar, and the moon comes down on top of the altar the way that rocks are situated, and that represents the moon portal. You could tell it was some kind of moon monument, you know, a lunar monument. And if you're just joining us, everybody, we're at themysticalspiral.com, and you can join our great guest, Maria Wheatley, at esotericcollege.com and averyexperience.co.uk. The song coming up is called The Dice Divide, and it's the new song by Far Radio Clouds. We'll be right back. Enjoy the tune. Spiral out.
For making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we are back on the Para X Radio Network. This is the Mystical Spiral Radio, and we are with the wonderful second generation dowser, amazing author, and wonderful, full of life energy, Maria Wheatley. And you can find her at the esotericcollege.com and the avery experience.co.uk. And you can also get her amazing books probably on Amazon, right, Maria? The Elongated Scrolls of Stonehenge?
That's right. Yeah, or through the website, theaveryexperience.co.uk. So, yeah, Amazon, absolutely.
Cool. And, this next 30 minutes is going to go by so fast. I wanted to go into the whole, Elongated Scrolls and of Stonehenge and the different... the mass murderer, basically, that was involved there. And before you go into that, I also wanted to mention how I think Stonehenge, typically as a site in general, over the thousands and thousands of years of its history, probably, like you said, it's gone through many stages. And I think it's been, either both negative and positive things have happened at that site, and I think over the years that those stones have accumulated so much different energy that it must be such an amazing experience. I've never been there to even be around them, and the energy they must have accumulated, because I think even at one time there was sex magic rituals done on top of those stones and all types of stuff, even the Etruscans, my line, my Strega line, comes from the Etruscans, and I know the Etruscans, they believed that there was three stages in a man's life, birth, sex, and death. So they started to want more power during that stage of sex and it to last longer and even to last eternally, some of them. So they were performing sex magic rituals, especially on megalithic stones as well, and possibly even ritual sacrifice at one time, too. So I think... it's gone through stages. Do you agree that it's gone through both negative and positive stages over the years?
Absolutely, and I think that's still ongoing now. I mean, deep in the night, it has been seen from those that stay near Stonehenge, majority of just men dressed in dark clothing have been seen going into Stonehenge. I mean, and normally it's out of hours and nobody's allowed to do that. And I do think at different times of our history, sites have been used for different things. That is for sure. So I think you're very right there. And it is, I mean, when you do go into these stone circles and ancient sites, if you get your own consciousness into, a loving, good intent, and you go in with that through the old way, through the proper entrance to these sites. It's about walking in the kind of the footsteps of the ancestors. And interestingly, when you go into Stonehenge for private access, you've paid the bucks, you're allowed into the center out of hours, so to speak. The security guards always try to get you in through its most weakest point. Whereas if you go round the correct way through the actual entrance, you will be far, far more empowered. And the security guards actually don't like when I say, no, not going in that way, going in the correct way. And it's interesting to say about, sacrifice, because towards the end of the Elongated Skulls rulership or community, what they had developed there, round about the kind of very last phase of Stonehenge. So we're going from its birth in 3000 BC to a millennia or so later. So we're right at the last phase. There was a guy in the prime of his life. He was probably a crossbreed between an elongated person and a round-skulled person, although it was an exchange of culture. And he was this person because his skull wasn't necessarily elongated, but it wasn't necessarily like ours round today. He was placed at the end entrance of Stonehenge by the ditch. There's a ditch and a bank there, which is called a henge. He was placed on top of that, and he was ritually killed and then placed into the ditch there. And he wasn't discovered until 1975 when some archaeologists were digging there. So he was placed there, but he was shot in the back four times. And he fell down. And that is part of Stonehenge's history. So I think you're really right on some of the traits that you've been describing, the ancient sites like Stonehenge.
Yeah, I think even possibly, you know, I've had dreams too, like the Knights Templar even might have been performing like sex magic rituals there, and possibly stuff like that, you know. And those, there's even in where my family comes from in Lake Nemi, there, you know, there's a portal beneath that lake that we're aware of. And also there's caves alongside of it where they would go underneath the cave and choose an astral familiar and meditate. And, you know, it's, I think even Stonehenge, they might have done that too. You know, sat between the two stones with the altar on top, almost like it's a portal. And they would sit there and picture the violet astral gateway and choose an astral familiar. And almost like the rocks are a portal, you know?
Absolutely, Ra. I think, again, you know, you're spot on. Because if you go to the Avebury area, there's a beautiful place called the Valley of the Stones. And the Valley of the Stones is the motherland of where the stones of Avebury got transported from, and indeed the large stones from Stonehenge. So imagine now, this really big valley strewn with all of these amazing stones. The Knights Templar went there, and they created a chapel right amid all of the stones used for Avebury and Stonehenge. I mean, hardly anything exists of their temple space today, but that's what the Knights Templar did. Now, there was one standing stone up there, stood really tall, about 25 feet high.
Wow.
It's recumbent today, and it must have been recumbent in the time of the Knights Templar, so it must have fallen at some time. Well, the Knights Templar did. They carved a piece of the stone away from that and transported it to their chapel. And I've always felt they kind of like made a font or something like that from the stone. And archaeologists know that the Knights Templar did this because they left a vortex offering of some coins that dated it to the time of King John here and Richard the Lionheart. So their temple space is a very kind of unusual energy up on the downs, because where the Knights Templar put that chapel, you overlook Avebury, you're on elevated ground. And they had lots of places around this area. So So bingo there, Ra.
That's intense. You know, I've always pictured stuff like that throughout my life, and I didn't want to sound crazy by saying it, because like they even said in the chat room here, you know, I'm looking at the chat room that we have, and they said, you know, Stonehenge is taught all wrong in school then, and I always knew it was. Like, I always had these envisions of certain things that took place there. And not to change the subject again, but real quick, but where we're talking about different parallels of energy, before we came on, you know, the radio tonight, we were talking prior on Skype, and you had mentioned Turin, because we were talking about Nemi, and that 41st parallel, I mean, is that like basically like a satanic line, ley line, or
right, you know, Turin is the reason the Holy Shroud is in Turin is because it is dark, dark, dark. Now take that away and it would be even darker. So imagine this for anybody that hasn't been to Turin. It's a bustling Italian town. It's vibrant. But when you go around a few corners just away from the madding crowd and you come to the 41st parallel, and you will look at this massive red obelisk stone. It rises phallic-like up into the sky. It is surrounded by some trees that kind of disguise it. But I have never seen tree trunks like it. All of the trees are black. So you're surrounded by these black-trunked trees. Now, I was asked...
That's like a nightmare, a horror nightmare.
Oh, it was awful. Now, imagine this. I go there to do a tour, and I cannot believe the tour operator wants to start this light tour at the Satanic Point.
Right there, yeah.
I'm thinking, really? Really?
Yeah. Like, so this is where we're starting the tour?
Yeah, and we're doing what this tracking. So anyway, so I asked this other woman who's really sensitive, and she's come to Turin for healing with me, stay in the car, you do not get out of the car. Now it's like a gothic thunderstorm. It is pelting down with rain, and I'm getting soaking wet.
Wow.
I'm tired from the flight. I'm at a weak point, yeah? And even though I have all the protection around me, I was at a weak point.
You picked something up, something clings to you then.
So my light was shining bright as I went towards the trees. So I go back into the car saying, I am not starting the tour here. And they said, well, we are. You will have to meet us somewhere else. So I said, okay, that's fine. I'll meet you at the light point of the 41st parallel, which is quite close to Notre Dame's house, incidentally. I said, I'll meet you there at the light point. I'm not meeting you at the dark point. So anyway, we go back to the hotel with my friend Dawn. We're settling in, and she has this really bad feeling. I don't want to sleep in this room. I don't want to sleep in this room. So I said, okay, Dawn, you have my room. I'll have that room, okay? Because I wanted her to settle in. This was all about healing for her, yeah? And anyway, in the night, I woke up, and I had this awful kind of feeling. And I thought, what's happened? But I drifted back into sleep, and I had a bath the next day because I'm getting ready for the tour. So I'm getting up nice and early. Then I realized, across my chest are three massive claw marks going down, and it was very painful, for example. So
that's the mark of the Trinity.
Exactly. It's the mark of the Trinity. So each time I went anywhere positive, and we went to some beautiful places like this church, the Mont Saint Michael in the Alps, it would start to ooze. Yeah, it would start to break out in this kind of gungy stuff. It was absolutely awful. So it culminated in me having to have this massive exorcism and cleansing point. And the people were very fearful that I wasn't going to make it back home. And they said, if you get on the plane and you feel frightened, you have to get off. I thought, oh, no pressure then. Oh, my God, I have to get off a plane. But when I went on the plane with Dawn, and she's saying, oh, you know, this is awful situation, I looked at our seat numbers, which were random on Ryanair. Yeah, and it was 1111. And as soon as I saw those numbers, I thought, I'm safe and I'm coming home from Turin. Now, that dark 41st parallel links all the financial centers. It links London to San Francisco financial center, whereas the white lays link to the prophecy of Notre Dame's, and it links to Lyon in France. So it has a light side, Turin, and it has a dark side. And I do believe the Holy Shroud is in Turin to lighten the forces there.
Yeah, it's like at the crossroads of light and dark right there. That's pretty intense.
Exactly. That's a really good description. It's at the crossroads of light and dark.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's crazy that, like, you were like a too light of a bright shining through there. Like, you were a magnet. As soon as you appeared on that on the scene, you probably were like a magnet to all these dark forces. And the fact that not only your immune system was low because you were so tired, but your spiritual, protection was, low. And you were the prime target for that. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and that was the thing. But that is the focal point. It is very unusual. Like I say, it's got this massive red obelisk stone. It's very phallic, surrounded by dark black trees.
Yeah,
and,
that's pretty intense.
And then really pointy railings all around it, and it is you can feel as you approach it. It sucks your energy down. It almost like wants your soul. It wants your life force. So that is the point. But on the other swing of the pendulum in Turin, when you go to the triangular point, because if you imagine these are triangular lays going, forming triangles everywhere. If you go to the light point, it is true, beautiful prophecy. And not far from Notre Dame's house, which I mentioned before, which is where these lay triangulation system focuses on, you have a wonderful Egyptian museum. So it's wow. Very close to the history, and again, I think it's deliberately placed there to empower the Egyptian artifacts there. So it's a very interesting Italian city, Turin.
yeah, no, it is. That is, and I think that you're right. You're dead on right when you say right on the mark when you say that's why they put the Shroud of Turin there. It's almost like to balance it out, you know.
Absolutely.
To get back into the elongated skulls that were found over in the Stonehenge, now they were all put in a mass grave, right? And they were all murdered?
Well, they were in different graves, but in the same area. So if you imagine sort of an area of about... a mile by a mile, yeah, and you have lots of different long barrows, around about 12 or so long barrows. The elongated ones were placed within those barrows, within that one particular area, and right around what I called the Neolithic Queen, because the Neolithic Queen was put in the largest long barrow in Europe. It's huge, and she was placed in there, and all of her, maybe her family, her relatives, were placed in the long barrows surrounding her, and each one had been murdered, which was clear from all of the archaeological reports. And their skulls and their long bones were taken from those barrows by Dr. Thurnham, and they were placed thereafter in Oxford, Cambridge, and the top universities here in the British Isles, and forgotten about. And it wasn't until I went to visit the Neolithic Queen. I tracked her down through research to Cambridge University, so I went to see her, and it was like signing in at an old-fashioned library where you had to write your name, your organization, and the date.
Really?
Yeah, and I noticed no technology at Cambridge. And
no
and
computer or digital? I would think it would be all high-tech.
No, that's what I thought, Rob, but no. So I signed in. I noticed the last person to have seen her was in the 1930s. She got these people around Stonehenge got forgotten, really deliberately so.
Yeah, now, deliberate is right.
Yeah, when I had that time, because this is our history, this is our holy history. So I get in there and I ask Great Spirit to help me. And I say, Great Spirit, you know, ask the curator lady to go away. Give me 5 minutes with this beautiful Neolithic queen. And I'm kind of praying like this. and I'm with a photographer, and her pager thing goes off. It was a bit like a mobile phone. And she said, oh, you don't mind if I leave you for 5 minutes. I go, no. And she said, oh, you won't really take any photographs or go too near the skull. No. Of course. So I, of course, as soon as she's gone, I put my hands around her throat chakra, my hands around her third eye chakra and round her crown chakra to really try and feel for her energies. And I just felt so close to these people of Stonehenge.
Wow.
And when I put my hand around her throat chakra, I really felt a tingle in my own throat chakra, as if I was possibly to be her voice for a little while and to give the history back of them to the people, which I'm so in gratitude of people like you, Ra, on radio shows that prepare to listen to this history, because it's got completely forgotten. And they're a part of us, you know. And you're all about DNA activation. Well, here are these amazing people that chose the sites of our ancient sites worldwide, and yet they're nearly forgotten in boxes in museums. Is not the way they wanted to be remembered, I am sure.
Yeah, and it's so deliberate, because they don't want us to explore our consciousness. They don't want us to spiritually evolve. They want to herd us like sheep, keep us defenseless, and they don't want us powerful, because I really feel that at one time, you know, we had the knowledge and, you know, powers and activation of the gods almost, you know, like we had powers of levitation and you know, we were all way more psychically active. I just think it's laying dormant now in our DNA, and it's up to us to activate it. And that's amazing, Maria. You know, you are a breath of fresh air, and we definitely got to have you back on again some other time, too. We only have, like, 5 minutes left. It goes so quick. But, yeah, you know what I just thought of, too?
Well,
What they say in Strega, in the Italian, with Turin, that's where they say the Malandante and the Benandante dance. The Malandante and the Benandante are the good and the bad witches, and they always said that in Turin, that's where they dance. The two of them meet and dance. So that's
interesting. Wow. Wow, bingo again, Ra.
Yeah. So it's like the light and the dark energies right there are, you know, intertwining and meeting at that one point.
Absolutely, and that is such a beautiful description, because it does feel like that completely.
Do you think the skulls in Stonehenge are related to Queen Puabi at all, in the Sumerian and the Anunnaki and that, you think, or even the ones in Paracas?
I do, and just it's interesting that you should say that. It's almost like you're kind of intuitively a step ahead of my own thought processes. But the interesting thing is, just recently I was looking into some barrows, a bit outside of Stonehenge, but within the vicinity of Stonehenge, so to speak. And if you ever find a plaque in the Bronze Age British Isles, that is your Holy Grail. It is an amazing find.
Wow.
And they found this plaque beneath a person that had been cremated, and their ashes were in an urn, and it was just the description written by a Victorian antiquarian was very similar to how Zachariah Sitchin describes how the Sumerians depicted the solar system, with a circle with six rays, for example, and lots of dots around it. I mean, I looked at read this description, got his book off my bookshelf, 12 Planet, and thought, I've heard this description before, and I matched the two up, and literally they were the same. So, and that included the 12th planet on that plaque. Now, where is that plaque? I instantly phoned up the British Museum, all the local sort of museums around here, who hadn't even heard of the barrow it came from, let alone where the find is. It's almost like it's disappeared, but I'm going to track it down.
That's amazing. And yeah, they had I've read the 12 planets, like they had Tiamat, Mars, mm-hmm. Venus, Mercury. It was all them.
Yes.
That's crazy. I really think that they've the military is, I mean, what's the reason why they're up on those sites, too? Why are they using those sites? I mean, it's all for a reason. They're controlling it for a reason. I mean, what are they doing there, even?
Exactly. If you look at the Salisbury Plain statistically for ancient sites in the British Isles, it has the most sites. It has over 2,000 sites alone on the area that they manage. And that is a huge, huge volume of ancient sites in one place. It was an ancestral spiritual capital of the ancient world, which was 25 miles by 25 miles, which is now under the military dominance. And I liken it to Area 51 in the United States. A, because you can't go in there. Strange craft are often seen, incidentally, flying over the Salisbury Plain or to the Salisbury Plain. Craft that is being escorted by helicopters into Salisbury Plain. What's going on there? Is that back engineered? What's going on? And they don't kind of disguise the fact, because people have seen them going in twilight hours, not in the dark of night, so to speak. So I think there's a lot going on the plain, and we need to tune into these places, be it Turin or be it Stonehenge, and give it our love and and give it our light, because together we can shine bright. We can unlock the holy history of our planet through the love in our hearts, and we can enter places through the love in our hearts. And that's where we can shine bright and just pour our love and light into these ancient sites, because they are ours. It's a part of us. It's our past and it's our future.
I can't say it any better than that, folks. Thanks for joining us again. We're with the great Maria Wheatley, who is the daughter of UK's top master dowser, the late Dennis Wheatley. So I just want to give him a shout out too. And you can find her at AveryExperience.co.uk and EsotericCollege.com, and I'm at TheMysticalSpiral.com and on YouTube, Exploring the Ka with Ra. It's been another great show. Thanks for joining us, and spiral out.
You in